I had never actually considered starting a company in my life. It's really one of the last things I ever thought I would do. But at a certain point, I started to realize what it really could do. Like, if this can be an alternative for plastic and what incredible impact that could have, then like a fire was lit. There was just nothing that was going to deter me from doing that. And because I wasn't part of an institution any longer, I wasn't working for some huge biotech company, the only way forward was to start a company and to go forward.
Welcome to the Business for Good podcast, a show where we spotlight companies making money by making the world a better place. I'm your host, Paul Shapiro, and if you share a passion for using commerce to solve many of the world's most pressing problems, then this is the show for you. Welcome, listeners. You are now consuming episode 31 of Business for Good, and appropriately so, since we are going to be talking shortly about packaging that's actually edible on this episode. But before we get to the interview with Lori Goff, it's now mid-December, and I hope you all are enjoying a peaceful holiday season. My wife, Toni, and I had a very nice Thanksgiving visiting my parents in Florida. Apparently, it's Jewish law that whenever Jews retire, they have to move there. And we're looking forward to spending the rest of the holiday season in California. Now, if you are thinking about what stocking stuffer your loved ones will value this year, if your loved ones are into science, technology, food, entrepreneurship, or just cool storytelling, let me shamelessly suggest that you consider getting a copy of my book, Clean Meat. As you can see at the website, cleanmeatbook.com, it's a pop sci and pop business book that tells the tale of the entrepreneurs, scientists, and investors who are racing to produce the world's first slaughter-free meat. I'm very fortunate that the book became a national bestseller in the US, and it's now out in numerous other countries too. Little makes me happier than when I hear people tell me that their life or their career was somehow impacted by reading Clean Meat, and I hope that will be true for someone on your nice list this holiday season too. So again, go to cleanmeatbook.com, and apparently the book is even on sale as I am recording this right now in mid-December 2019. Now, on to this interview with Lori Goff, founder and CEO of Outlander Materials. You may remember the recent episode with TerraCycle that there's big business to be had recycling materials that most people consider unrecyclable. Well, Lori is using her background in biotech to make an alternative to plastic that need not be recycled at all, since she says it's biodegradable. And if you want, it's even edible. As you'll hear, Lori is using the wastewater from beer breweries, subjecting it to a specific type of fermentation, and then creating an alternative to plastic wrappers. Her company has been personally bootstrapped until recently, when she started winning governmental grants in the European Union. Lori is already making her wrappers, made out of a material she calls unplastic, and her goal is to start selling them to companies as an alternative to their plastic wrappers in 2020. While wrappers are the low-hanging fruit, Outlander Materials already has its eyes on other applications too. This is just one more way that when science, technology, and commerce merge to solve a serious social problem, in this case, plastic waste, business innovators like Lori Goff can be an enormous force for good. So, happy holidays, and I now bring you Outlander Materials CEO, Lori Goff.
Lori, welcome to the Business for Good podcast.
Hi, Paul. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Great for you to pipe in from the Netherlands, but I understand that you are not a Dutch person by birth, that you moved there later in life, right?
Yeah, that's true. I'm American. I'm from Omaha, Nebraska.
So Nebraska to the Netherlands. What led you there?
Around 7 years ago or so, I did a year abroad, and I spent the first half of the year in Riga in Latvia and the second half in Groningen, which is in the north of the Netherlands. And then, I met a Dutch boy and fell in love. So when I finished my degree, I just popped right back over to the Netherlands, and I've been here ever since.
Nice. You know, I grew up on the East Coast and now live in California, and many people presume that I moved out here for business-related purposes, since I now run a startup out here. But the truth is that I had similar motivations, that I moved out here to be with my then girlfriend, who is now my wife. And so it was not so much a matter of business strategy as much of a matter of the heart that I moved what seemed to me like halfway across the world as well. So I understand why you did it. So you, Lori, are a biotechnologist. You studied biotech in school. Were you thinking about taking biotech for some reason relating to trying to save the planet, or were you just taking it because you liked science? Like, what led you to become interested in biotech in the first place?
It was exactly to save the planet. Do you remember this cartoon, Captain Planet, from when we were kids?
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
He's the reason I do it all.
All right. Well, for folks who weren't young in the early 90s, tell them who Captain Planet is.
Yeah. So Captain Planet is a superhero that fights pollution. The premise of the show is that there's 5 kids from across the globe, all selected by Gaia, I guess, Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. And she gives them each a magic ring: earth, fire, wind, water, and heart. And they go around the world and they use their magic rings to fight pollution and fight greed and make the environment a better place. But inevitably, in every episode, it always becomes too big for them. So they have to come together, combine their powers, and call out for Captain Planet. And then there's like this blue tornado, and Captain Planet appears. He cleans up the pollution, he puts the bad guys away, plants some trees. And then at the end of the episode, he talks to you about what happened, like, why was it wrong what these guys did? What could you do in your community? And it always left me with this feeling of personal responsibility. Like, we can't expect other people to solve the problems for us, that we have to take steps. We have to do it with our own hands to make the world a little bit better. And then some, yeah.
Do you remember Captain Planet's slogan?
Yeah, so be a hero, take pollution down to zero.
Nice. Yes. Yeah. 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 That was very cool. Take pollution down to zero. So if I wonder how many other Lori Goffs are out there, people who saw Captain Planet, you know, back in the early 90s and have since gone on to have some big impact in their life in the way that it's had for you.
I don't know. I mean, I hope thousands, millions.
Yeah. Well, I've talked to a lot of people who are using business to try to help the planet, and I can assure you that 0% of them have cited Captain Planet as their inspiration so far. So right now, the N equals one in your case, Lori. But I do hope that you'll contact the folks who put on that show, maybe like the animators, the writers, and so on, and let them know what effect it had on you, because I'm sure that was exactly their intent.
Wow, that's actually a fantastic idea.
Yeah. All right.
Somehow that has never occurred to me.
I'm sure that you will make their day, maybe even their month when you tell them that they had such an impact on you. All right. So, you know, a lot of people, though, who want to help the environment, many of them are skeptical of biotech. They're not thinking, I'm going to go become a biotechnologist. They maybe go work for environmental nonprofit organizations. They try to get involved in public policy. What led you to think, no, actually, I think biotechnology is what's going to bring pollution down to zero?
It was a little bit of a longer road. I started out very much in the arts. So most of my life, I thought I would grow up to be an artist. And my first degree was in the fine arts and photography. But at a certain point, I thought, okay, I don't feel like I can really do anything with this. And I had heard about algae being grown in omega bags on wastewater, and then they were using that to produce biodiesel. And it just hit me. I'm like, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard of in my life. How do I go do that? And eventually I came across biotech seeming to be the most effective solution for me to have the right background, the right education to bring these kinds of projects forward. So, I mean, and I'm also terrible at math, so it was a big decision. But yeah, I went through it, and in the end, I did make biodiesel, not from algae, but from used cooking oil that we collected from local restaurants in the city.
How old were you at this point?
Late 20s, I guess, okay, when I finished.
And so you're making biodiesel from oil, and did you actually, you put it in cars and ran the cars on them?
Yeah. Yeah, we did. A little Omaha biofuel co-op in nice. Omaha, Nebraska.
Nice. And so did you have to convert any of the cars to accept it, or you were just using cars that already could run on it?
I think it was a mix of both. So it wasn't my car that was, diesel equipped. You can't do it with a gasoline car, but you need either a regular diesel one that I think you can do a small conversion, or I think the older diesel trucks you could do right away, but I'm not 100%. They were already converted when I joined the co-op.
All right. So you are now using technology to make biodiesel. And then what led you from that to get to the place where you're thinking, actually, I want to make plastic that uses no petroleum?
Okay. All right. That's an easier jump. So by this time, I had already met that Dutch boy. And the moment I was finishing up my degree, we decided that I should come move here to the Netherlands. And when I first got here, I was expecting that, well, you know, I did very well in biotech, that I would really easily get a job in the Netherlands. But I didn't speak Dutch at the time, so that ended up being a little bit harder than I expected. And in the meantime, some friends gave me a beer brewing kit. So then I taught myself to brew beer in my kitchen. And then I was like, wow, this is actually pretty cool. Maybe I'm going to become a beer brewer. And I thought, to step up my beer brewing game, I've got to talk to breweries and see what's really going on. So I spoke to maybe four or five of them. And every time, we would always end up on how much waste is produced in beer brewing, and particularly the amount of water. So there's a rough average that for every liter of beer that's brewed, around 6 liters of water get wasted in the process. So that's a lot of water.
And can you, for those who aren't familiar with beer brewing, why is there so much waste? Why does it take so much more water that is considered excess?
It's a bit with each stage of the brewing process. So you, I don't know, like a mini rundown in beer brewing, you have your grains, you grind them up. You throw them in this kettle called a mashing kettle, where the grains are mixed with warm water and the starches are converted into a nice syrupy liquid called wort. Then you move that to a boiling kettle, and then the boiling kettle to a cooling kettle, and then to the fermentation tank, where you throw in the yeast and what comes out is beer. And then you bottle it and so forth. And at each of these stages, there's always residual wort and beer left over, which is quite significant. And then you have the rinsing stages, so the cleaning after each brewing process. And all of this amounts to a lot of water that gets used. Some breweries are better at reusing their water or just using less in general, and some are terrible. So just a rough average.
All right. So thanks for that. So you are brewing beer. You're learning how much waste there is, especially water. And I presume it's not only water, that there are nutrients in there. And so you start thinking that you might be able to do something with it.
Yeah. I was sitting around with another friend who also studied biotech. And we had joined this one project that was just about the circular economy and entrepreneurship within the Netherlands, within the EU. Sorry. And they gave us this sort of fake assignment of, yes, start a company that's somehow circular. And so she's like, well, forget the assignment. You know, what kind of thing would you do if it wasn't related to this? And I thought, oh, I'd absolutely find a way to turn that wonderful, wonderful wastewater into something that's more useful. Like going back to using algae on wastewater to produce biodiesel, it just, for me, was the most natural connection. And I didn't know I was going to make an alternative for plastic in the beginning. It was just a way of using the wastewater as a resource. And then I created a kind of biomaterial. And when I looked into the qualities of the biomaterial, I realized that it could be a very genuine alternative for plastics, particularly single-use plastic foils with food packaging.
What were those properties that you were seeking?
So one is the sort of non-toxic and compostable aspect, which it is. It's transparent. There's no smell. There's no sort of off flavors that it would add to something. It has a fantastic air barrier. So air barriers prolong the shelf life of foods. So you could have less food waste and a good packaging. It's resistant to fats and oils. It's printable. So it was pretty great. So I thought I'd pursue that.
You were taking this class and they said to think about starting a company, and you figured out that you could do something with this beer brewing waste. What are these wrappers that you're making actually made out of? I know that they're edible, right?
Sort of. Okay. So I can't tell you what it's made out of yet because we're just about to start a patent process.
Okay.
So unfortunately, some things have to stay secret for the moment. It's technically edible now. Although we're not really trying to advertise this part. So the idea isn't that you should eat it, but that it's so safe and you can eat it. So when it ends up in the environment, as all things do tend to do, it will harmlessly compost back to nature. So there's no negative effects.
What are you calling it? I know you don't want to disclose what it is actually made out of, but what are you calling it?
I call it unplastic.
Unplastic. All right. So the process for making unplastic, without giving away any of your secret sauce here, there's a fermentation step that you're subjecting beer brewery waste to, right?
Yeah.
And Did you have that background in fermentation from your days doing biofuel? Did you team up with somebody else to start this company who was a fermentation specialist? Like, how did that actually come to be?
Yeah, no, I taught myself about fermentation when I started brewing beer. So the biotech background just gave me the background to go forward with this. So to figure out how to read scientific papers, to teach myself other types of science. So there's microbiology involved, there's a significant amount of chemistry and monitoring and being good at writing down very specific details. But I didn't team up with anybody. It was just a very slow, very kitchen-esque process in the beginning.
And at what point, Lori, did you realize that you actually wanted to start a company rather than just doing something as a class project?
Yeah, so I mulled over the idea on it for about a year, really, because I had never actually considered starting a company in my life. It's really one of the last things I ever thought I would do. But at a certain point, I started to realize what it really could do. Like, if this can be an alternative for plastic and what incredible impact that could have, then like a fire was lit. There was just nothing that was going to deter me from doing that. And because I wasn't part of an institution any longer, I wasn't working for some huge biotech company, the only way forward was to start a company and to go forward.
And did you start it by yourself? Or were you a sole founder, or did you find other people to start it with?
Yeah, by myself. So I was alone for about a year. I've only recently built up a team around me in the last couple of months.
And how were you funding it during that year? And how did you hire these people? Where did the money come from?
I had a small savings in my account when I quit my job. And I lived off that for a little over half a year. So I rented a laboratory and paid for that myself. I was very lucky that my boyfriend was going to cover some of the extra rent and our utilities to let me pursue this. And I ate a lot of free food at events.
Well, good advertisement for having a partner who can help chip in here.
Yeah, a very struggling startup.
And then to actually hire these folks, how did you seek funding from outside sources at that point?
Well, we're only just about to come into this. So I applied for a grant and a subsidy, and I have a partner company. So I work very closely with the paper and board industry here in the Netherlands, and I work 8 days a month for them. So a little bit part-time, and through that I have access to a wider network and more services. And I'm sort of renting an intern from the paper and board industry. And my partner now, who's my CFO, he was looking for a more impactful startup to join. And so when we got connected, he also just felt really passionate about this. And he's joined me also on his own free time. So we're...
Nice. So you really are the quintessential bootstrapping shoestring startup. So you've not raised any money from any venture capitalists. You've not brought in any funding. There's no other equity holders in the company aside from yourself.
Yeah.
And how much Unplastic have you produced? Like, I've seen photos and videos of it, so I know you are producing it. It's not just theoretical, but how much have you produced so far?
As a dry foil, maybe less than 25 kilos. It's all proof of principle work right now. Mm-hmm. The moment I've sort of got the principle done, then I think, well, let's skip the small, medium production because that's not really impactful and it's not applicable to how it would be produced on a large scale. So I'm trying to just go directly that way.
Mm-hmm. And how far away from commercializing Unplastic do you think you are?
We've just started kind of phase two for two ends of the research. And let's say the stars align, nothing goes wrong. We think that by mid-2020, we could have at least small production up and running.
All right. And is your goal to sell it to other companies for them to use? Do you think it would be more of like a consumer good or more B2B?
Definitely B2B. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's, individual people aren't really buying single-use packaging for their foods. Mm-hmm. It's the industry that uses it. It's the industry that needs something different that's still functional and still doesn't add a burden to the world. So
I presume, you know, you're thinking about candy wrappers. I don't know anything about that industry, but I presume that each wrapper is a minuscule fraction of a penny. How much do you think that you'll be able to produce on plastic for?
Well, the beginning will probably be a little expensive, but with some of the assumptions that we've made, we think that within a few years, we could have it down to about 3 to 5 euros a kilogram. So that's, it's a little bit, it's, well, it's more expensive than traditional PE plastic, but it's PLA, which is another bioplastic, well, not another, but is a bioplastic that's sometimes used, mm-hmm. is sold between 1 and 3 euros a kilogram. So it's pretty close, and it certainly has a lot less environmental costs attached to it.
Right. So you think you could get it down to pretty close to the cost of plastic wrappers within a few years?
Yeah.
And what type of fermentation assets do you think you would need for that? Are we talking about like full scale production with, 100 or 200,000 liter bioreactors? Is that what you think you would need to get to that scale?
I think it will depend on the brewery and the other food industry partners that we end up setting up at. Mm-hmm. Sort of the concept we would like to move to is that we have our sort of Outlander reactor system that can be applied at a brewery on site so that we have a shorter supply chain. Everything can be done in real time, and it's easier to implement on a sort of, how would I say it? A decentralized circular solution for it. So kind of plug and chug, I guess. We wanted to be able to fit a small brewery, but also a huge brewery, and just kind of increase the amount that can fit their waste production. And ideally, it's you produce unplastic and you use unplastic all in the same region.
Mm, so you're envisioning a situation where a beer brewery would let you set up on site to make unplastic with their wastewater, and then they would use that plastic as well for some use that they need it for?
Not quite. Let's say we're in the city of Rotterdam or Omaha or wherever, you're in one location, and you could put an Outlander reactor at each of the breweries. You'll produce the raw product on site, which will be harvested and then taken to a centralized location in that city where it's further processed and then used on packaging that's in that area.
I see. Okay. Well, it sounds like a very cool vision. Have you thought about seeking external funding for this to help expedite your process?
Yes. I'm at a stage where I can no longer fund it on myself just because the kind of testing we require is super expensive. Mm-hmm. So I've applied for subsidies and grants. We should hear back within a month or two if any of these are coming through. And we eventually will probably look towards investment, but we'd like to save this for when we really have our system down, when the full proof of concept is ready. And when we start to look towards putting installations on site, that's when investment will become a necessary step.
Okay. When you think about the problem that plastic poses, you know, a lot of the times people, they think about recycling, like, why can't we just recycle more plastic? Why go this route? Why try to create a new type of plastic lorry instead of just recycling and finding new ways to reuse the plastic we already have?
Excellent question. And it's a little bit nuanced, so there'll probably be a couple of avenues here. I'm sorry to have to do this, but I have to correct that it's not plastic. It's also not a bioplastic, but something else. And it's an important detail in the sense of why we don't recycle or reuse the plastics. Well, for food packaging in particular, almost everything that is used is virgin sourced. So virgin petrol plastic and virgin bioplastics are used. And this is due to contamination and quality control, so forth. Like, food is our most precious resource, right? And then if we move into the recycling system, there are many, many types of plastics. And I really only know about the ones we use within food, not even all the others. But they, for the most part, need individual streams. So PET needs to be in one stream. Low-density polyethylene should be in one stream. PLA, a bioplastic, should have its own stream. And you can't really mix and match, or the entire stream might be considered contaminated and either incinerated or sent to a landfill rather than being recycled, because the end result would have a lower quality or lower ability to be trusting, like, what's in it. So it's, if that makes sense.
So basically what you're saying is you think that The logistical difficulties of recycling plastic as it stands today mean that a better solution would be creating an alternative to plastic rather than trying to recycle the current plastic that we have for logistical reasons?
Yes and no. I do think logistics and the practicalities of what's happening in the recycling system is absolutely something that should be considered and improved. But it's such a huge question, and I really want to answer every part. Well, in one end, it's maybe not the best case scenario. So ideally, we would have this one type of plastic, it's wrapping everything, and then it's perfectly recycled again and again forever. In reality, however, particularly when it comes to candy wrappers, which are so small, they never make it to the recycling system. So even if the facility could and financially feasible to recycle low-density polyethylene, which is not really done, it will never make it there. You know, you take the candy, you put it in your jacket, it falls out on the street or in the grass, in the river, whatever. It's the second largest ocean trash whenever they do the collections for cigarette butts and then candy wrappers. And so just in the sense of what's really happening, I think a material that doesn't last much longer than the food that it's wrapping is the most applicable idea, rather than one that will last for 50 to 100 years at least. That being said, I do think that we should put a lot more effort into the recycling system, because it's not just everything goes into one bin and then it's magically recycled, but some facilities don't have the capability to recycle all of these different plastics, or they don't have the technology to sort them correctly. And we also have just too much. Just the sheer capacity of how much plastics we have to be recycled still is astronomical. And previously, the Western world, at least, was sending it mostly to China and Southeast Asia. And these countries are now starting to reject these plastics. And in the West, we don't have the facilities that are capable of recycling what we previously sent abroad. And we still have to sort that out.
Laurie, you're making unplastic film right now. Do you have aspirations to do other types of plastics, or do you think that your process lends itself to the capacity to make other types of plastic alternatives too?
It does. We're looking mostly now at trying to produce foils that can replace sort of low density foils within food packaging. We want to use it in places where there's not already a feasible alternative in place. So it's lightweight, it still functions, it's perfect for single use. And this is an area where there aren't a lot of suitable alternatives. We also would like to look in next towards coatings for paper and board. So every paper coffee cup that we have for coffee is coming with a plastic lining, and it's either petrochemical based or a PLA lining. And the petrochemical linings have additives that are often leached into the substance they touch, so like a hot coffee, and then we consume those additives. One of the classes is called phthalates. And when phthalates are exposed to heat or fat, they're released into that substance. And they've been linked to obesity, diabetes, infertility with men. And if you look at this one and PLA, even though they're different types of plastic, when they go into paper recycling, they both hinder the process and end up sort of deteriorating the quality of the resulting paper that you can get out of recycling. So in this sense, it would alleviate some of the burden both on our physical health and on recycling.
Laurie, a couple of times during our conversation here, you've pressed back on, you know, calling this a plastic, emphasizing that it's not a plastic. You know, I think about other companies like, let's say, that are making, let's say, milk out of almonds or soybeans. They call it soy milk. They call it oat milk. Or if you think about things like plant-based meat, you know, these companies are saying, basically, we're making meat out of plants. You, though, seem to want to go the other direction. You don't want to say that you're making plastic out of beer brewery waste. You want to say that you're making something that isn't plastic at all. Why is that? And what do you think is the right way to market it?
Oh, man, that's a good question. part of why I've named it unplastic is that I don't want to be seen as anti-plastic. I absolutely think that plastics are an incredible material. and they serve a function in our society. We would and could not be where we are today, for better and for worse, without plastics. Plastics are good at literally everything except for going away. And so I think it's not about being anti-plastic or trying to get rid of them, but using them where they're best suited in these incredible applications, and to use an alternative for plastic and un-plastic in types of applications where short life single use is the most suitable. And I think also un-plastic, it seems to kind of denote that it can be used in similar areas where we are using plastics, but it's just odd enough for you to think, it's something else. It's un-plastic. And it's a little bit nicer as a conversation starter. I don't mind talking to people about the differences between what unplastic is and regular plastics, and leading us down into the recycling system or food contact safety issues or any number of places where this conversation can lead. So it's fun, it's catchy, and it always leads towards a more interesting and dynamic conversation.
Okay. Lori, you're now, I think, about a year and a half in since you started Unplastic, right? Or since you started Outletter Materials making Unplastic. If you have somebody listening right now who, let's say, is a want-to-be entrepreneur, either maybe they're an entrepreneur and they're thinking about starting their own company, are there any resources that have been helpful for you in the last year and a half or even prior to that, whether books or videos or speeches or anything else that you think would be good for them to check out so they can try to go down the same path that you have gone down, whether regarding plastic waste or any other problem that they're trying to solve?
I think, you've probably heard this one 100 times, but I think TED Talks has been my most amazing resource, both the videos and the book by Chris Anderson. I think it's The Official Guide to Public Speaking, has been one of the best resources I've had so far. As a startup, as an entrepreneur, you're going to have to tell your story. You're going to have to speak publicly many, many times, to do small pitches, to know how to put this incredibly complex and nuanced multi-dimensional story that's happening in your head into some kind of succinct story that someone else will understand is the most useful skill that I have learned in the last year and a half. And TED Talks in general and his book have really helped me to find my own method of speaking that's comfortable for me, that's authentic, and lets me tell the story in a way that I want to tell it. I cannot recommend anything more than that.
And I know that you have gone on to give a number of public talks about Outlander Materials, and I think that you even won a European-wide pitch competition for startups, right? Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was when I first started pitching, really. I had been invited to a sort of pre-South by Southwest, which is an innovation conference in Austin, Texas, pitch contest, but here in the city of Rotterdam, so the city was looking for innovative startups to send to South by Southwest and to show what cool stuff is happening here in the Netherlands. So I joined and pitched for them, and I made it to the top four, which I totally did not expect. And then, they sent us to South by Southwest, where we had to do a number of pitches. And out of all the EU startups in that pitch contest, I won.
Congratulations. What did you win? Aside from bragging rights and recognition, what did you win?
The first place included a scale-up incubator program that was based in France. So in the end, I wasn't able to join it. And there was quite a lot from it. In the end, it's mostly been the connections from it. So there are a lot of contacts in Austin, Texas there. A CEO of a huge biotech company there has sort of come my semi-mentor. So whenever I have very big questions about contracts or dealing with negotiation tactics, I can call him.
So finally, Lori, I presume that since you were taking a class and people were being asked to start lots of companies, and you probably have thought about other types of companies that you might be interested in, you're now pursuing a plastic alternative through entrepreneurship. But are there any other ideas, business ideas, that you might suggest that you hope somebody else will work on who might be listening, who could try to take on some social problem, whether environmental or otherwise, that you hope that they'll pursue?
Yes. There are three right away that I would really love.
Great. Let's give those ideas out.
The first one is one that I would do if I wasn't doing this. And it would be to create an alternative cheese. So I guess vegan cheese, but not from soy or nuts, but by using native agriculture in whatever area you're in. So the example in the Netherlands would be not to grow soy, but something called a field bean. Mm-hmm. And then look at how we can use the natural diversity here, the natural ecosystem, and plants that are native, so you don't have to do a lot of soil changes. And then process that into a super delicious fermented cheese that's vegan. That would be, the vegan cheesery, I guess, would be startup number one. And the second two are things that I think I could never hope to do on my own, but I hope that someone else is looking at it. And it's to use a plant. I think it's some kind of climbing plant that produces a compound called purpurin. I'm not totally sure how to say it. And it's a renewable alternative for cobalt in batteries. So as the world is moving towards a sort of more electric cars and everyone has a laptop and a smartphone and a smart music system at home, we'll rely more and more on these precious metals, which are not recycled sometimes, are hard to get via mining, or are toxic. I would love for someone to start using sort of renewable plant-based, somehow, alternative compounds and pigments that can be used in our electric system. And the third is, this is also a much bigger story, but there's a book called A World in a Grain of Sand. And it leads you down this incredible path about how sand is impacting our life. And that moves into concrete and how we cannot use desert sand as a means for aggregate or as in the cement binding. And if they're somehow able to turn desert sand into a usable concrete and construction sand, I think that that would be astronomically fantastic in the infrastructure for our world.
Cool. Well, three really good ideas. And hopefully in the same way that the Captain Planet creators inspired you to start Outlander Materials, maybe you on this podcast will inspire somebody to start one or more of these companies. So we'll report back when we hear from somebody about that. All right.
Wow, that'd be super cool. Thanks.
All right, Laurie. Well, needless to say, what you're doing sounds really cool. And I really hope that you will come onto market in the near future, hopefully, as you said, in 2020 with Unplastic. And I hope I get to try it. And I can assure you, while it is not intended to be eaten, I probably will eat it just to see and be able to just to be able to say that I ate Unplastic. So I look forward to hopefully getting a chance to try it in the coming year or so.
Thank you. I hope very much that it's going to be something that's out there. And yeah, that we're living in an unplastic world, right?
Very much so. All right, Laurie, thanks so much. Great to talk with you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks for listening. We hope you found use in this episode. If so, don't keep it to yourself. Please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. And as always, we hope you will be in the business of doing good.